to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes. Good. Pick up 200 shares.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howard, Mr. Davis Cantina on the board as he is every Thursday. Beautiful day in Chicago, as David would say, or will say. S&P futures down 1275, NASDAQ futures down 35. It was after a horrendous day yesterday, and we actually were looking to bounce a little last night, but we're not bouncing anymore. And if you're one of the people who loves the Bitcoin and stuff, I was actually talking to a client yesterday from one of the places that I do some, not a PTI client, but a Wall Street Advisor client. And the guy starts talking about the Bitcoin stuff. Lou, how are you, bud? And I go,
I'm good. How are you this morning?
I said, hey, do yourself a favor. Don't talk to me at all about these cryptos. I said, I think they're all worthless, yet people have made a lot of money, so I'm not the right guy to talk to. Get somebody with maybe a more open mind regarding it. But here, Bitcoin this morning is down, what, $5,600? As Elon Musk says he's not going to take no stinking Bitcoin for his cars or whatever the hell he said last night. Some bizarre stuff.
I would never suggest, or I would never invest personally in something that I don't understand. And I don't understand where the value is for Bitcoin, except, I mean, I guess it's like, it reminds me, as I understand it, and this is probably my issue, it reminds me of a Ponzi scheme. You know, there's just a continual, the guys up front are relying on the latest arrivals in back to fund the latest gain.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And so I can't support something like that. Don't get me started. I think.
What if you did buy some?
It's unsustainable.
But if you did buy some, it would become your obligation to go on national TV and tell everybody else to buy it.
Well, in that respect, it's just like getting vaccinated or being a vegan or going to CrossFit. You know, it's like the old joke at a bar. You know, there's you walk into a bar and there's a vegan. A CrossFit specialist and somebody who's gay, you know, at the bar. How do you identify them? You wait 30 seconds and they'll tell you. That kind of thing.
My grandmother used to say the reforms are the worst. former smoker is going to tell you how bad it is for you. A former drunk is going to tell you how bad it is for you.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a
there's nobody more virtuous. What's the old joke? There's nobody more virtuous than a reformed prostitute.
Oh yeah. God.
Yeah. I wanted to throw our sports connection, which I try to throw in here each time. I don't do it all the time. This morning, right away, because I'm fascinated by what is starting to happen with this Kentucky Derby situation. The winning horse is now apparently is qualified, I think, because of the presence of some steroid that was inadvertently used on it in some kind of antifungal cream or some kind of antifungal treatment. They rubbed it on the horse. It contained a banned substance that worked its way into the horse's bloodstream and came up on a drug test. So now if you're a winner, if you're a gambler, and because the owners of the horse will give back their prize money. But if you're a gambler who bet on this thing, and you've already collected your winnings, or if you're somebody who bet on horse number two, and you haven't collected your winnings, what do you do? What kind of recourse do you have?
I'm gonna say, Lucy, you know, you're a guy that in a lot of ways had a very good childhood, but in some ways you had a very misspent childhood because you don't know this stuff. Now, if you'd have hung around, if your parents would have gone to the track, you know, twice a month, and your aunt and uncle went every time they possibly could. I knew all this stuff when I was five. Once it's official, what does official mean? Official.
Yeah.
Once it says that and they pay out, it's over, bud.
So the question is, have these? I mean, I'm sure there's some bookies that have paid out already. But
everybody
are there
has
to pay out before it becomes official.
It was official. It's official. Once they put the official up there, there's no inquiry sign up on the board. It says official. They paid.
Yeah. So if you're, there's an interesting question in and of itself. If I was a bookie, I would say, fine, you got a winning ticket, but you know, we're not paying out until the horse passes.
No. When you go to the track, nobody does anymore. If you go to the track, the race comes on, and it comes out. You know, Lou won. He's the 4 horse. 4, David's the 6 horse. I'm the 2 horse. 4, 6, 2. It comes up there. They wait. If there's no inquiry, the word official comes up. Once it's official, everybody gets paid. It's over. Or else the other sign is inquiry. And once the inquiry comes up, they either change the numbers. But once that official sign comes up, everybody gets paid. Chop chop.
Okay, so that's at the track.
Anywhere. Off
but,
track.
But I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
There's a substantial amount of the betting on this. Well, okay, so then there's a substantial amount of betting that goes online here. All of that is done with, I assume, credit card or some other electronic payment mechanism. Can the bookies go back and recoup based on the change in result?
The result, what I'm saying is the official result has not changed. The horse was disqualified.
All right. Let's take, I don't think that's correct. It may be correct for people getting paid out in cash. I don't think that's correct necessarily for people who bet electronically.
But where are you going to get the money from, Lou? Who's going to?
What money?
I honestly don't know how. Here's how it's a pari-mutual
system.
Here's
the scenario I envision. You put a credit card payment down, your bet, you know, whatever, 12-1 or whatever that horse was paying. The horse wins, and let's just say the bookie is stupid enough to make the payouts immediately. That money hits your bank account or your credit card account or whatever the payout mechanism is. And then the results are reversed. What's to prevent the bookie from going back in and reversing that strike?
Well, here's. I mean, I'm not sure. Let's put it this way: I'm not sure exactly if you go to your credit card guy or your local bartender, and I use the term books your bet. You know what that means? He doesn't actually put your bet down at the track or an OTB or someplace. But here's how horse racing works. It's a pari-mutuel system, which some of the listeners might not know, so I'll explain it for a second. When you go out to the track, you'll see a big board saying the horse will be 12-1. All of a sudden, next minute, it's 11-1, and then it's 10-1. What it says is, in there's all these different pools. In the win pool, okay, so everybody bets on a horse to win. You bet on the place, you bet on the show, but say that they're all different pools. So if you bet in the win pool, all this money goes in the pool, and they keep track of how much was bet on every horse. Okay, so what they do, Lou, at the end of the day, the state and the tracks and everybody, I think they get, that's when I used to notice crap, 15.5% or something. So it's actually a pretty darn good deal. It's way better than like the lottery at 45 the state takes. So they take, say, 15%, and they pay the rest out. So that's why what they pay sometimes is where why the last person in, the horse could be 10-1, and a big swinging guy like you could walk up and put 5,000 on David to win. All of a sudden, the odds on David change because the payout is the amount of money in the win pool minus 15% divided by the amount of tickets. That's the payout. So once the race becomes official, they pay all that money out to the people who bet on David. All right, so the next day, if all of a sudden David's disqualified, the money's gone because it came out of the pool. There's no guy with a credit card or anything else. So it is in the track, when he went to off-track betting, okay, in Illinois, everybody participated in the same pool and went back to the track. And now in New York, it was different. There was an off-track pool and there was at-the-track pool. So the horse might pay $8 at the track. It might pay $9.50. In the off-track betting pool. And so when Illinois had off-track betting, they said, we don't want to do that. We don't want to confuse everything. So they jammed everything into the, correctly, I believe, into the one pool. But you can go out, the big board in the middle of the field, you can actually see how much is in the show pool, how much is in the win pool. And every single one, like the daily doubles. there's a daily double pull, and it'll come up. You'll see the numbers flashing. The four six doubles, should it win, will pay this much.
So
the money's gone, is what I'm saying.
All right, so I'm going to do my lawyer thing. And in law school, the first thing they teach you is when confronted with something about which you don't know anything, and as you can tell from my comments, I don't about horse racing, you go and you try to find a rule book somewhere or a statute somewhere. And, as I'm sure there are in Illinois, Kentucky has rules about horse racing.
I'm sure they're the same
thing.
They've
got a commission, a horse racing commission.
They do in Illinois. They do everywhere.
So here's the deal. The rules, and I'm quoting from Jonathan Turley's excellent column on this subject, which, by the way, if Dave can find it, he can link to. The rules of the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission control, and those rules mandate that the bets and payments are final, despite a later showing that it was a ripoff for gamblers. Once the race is called, it can be uncalled for the horse, but not for the gamblers.
What have I been saying? That's exactly what I've been saying.
Now, but it's nice to sort of reason through this stuff for the benefit of the listeners. So now you've got a class of gamblers who've had a windfall, however many bet on that horse, a relatively small number. But then you've got a class of gamblers, a very large number, who were basically screwed because they didn't bet on the horse. They bet on some other horse, or they bet on a specific order of horses that has now been invalidated. They didn't bet on a specific order of horses, but that order of horses has now been validated. And they're entitled, or they believe they're entitled, to some recovery.
They can believe all they want, Lou. The only time I would.
No. But see, they're not going to go after the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission. They're going to go after the horse's owner and the consortium that supported the horse, because, as Turley notes, what happened to this horse was either gross negligence, especially in a sport as heavily regulated as horse racing, or intentional.
I'll tell you what, Lou. From my knowledge of racing, I used to read books on this stuff because my stepfather knew everything that was about horses. He went to an entire meet of a harness meet one night. This is Walt, Dave, and he went to an entire meet, and the accountant that he was, he kept track of everything: parking, beer, hamburger, and he actually was up money for the meet. He bet every race for the entire 7 weeks at Sportsman's Park, wherever the hell it was, which is pretty interesting if you can do that. But the only one I thought was really a screw job, what you're talking about, Lou, was the Kentucky Derby. Remember a few years ago that they had the complaint and they changed the winner later?
Well, it was a few years ago. It was like almost 50 years ago, Dancer's Image.
Yeah, right? because that was the only time I've ever normally... I mean, I've been at a couple of... I benefited from one when I was at Spring Break. It's a trifecta, but it's only two. It's not the bifecta. It's what the hell I call it. It's not the Quinella.
Exacta.
That's the exacta, because the Quinella is either one, right? Either one wins. They got to win in order.
Yeah.
So we had the exacta. We had the 5-3, and of course 3-5 wins. So of course there's an inquiry, and they flipped them around, and then we ended up winning. Me and my two buddies. This is 1973. We won $100, which is a lot of money in 1973. So this was the first time I had ever seen a complaint come from a horse that wasn't part of the "you bumped me." Usually it's the horse that gets bumped. This was a third party horse. It said this guy bumped that guy, therefore I should have won, even though he was not even part of the fray. So it didn't affect him at all, and yet he ended up being the winner. I still think that was wrong, to be honest with you. But that's totally different here to what we're talking about. But you know what's weird,
yeah.
So
I mean the point of Charlie's article, and this, I think, so this has, this is other ramifications. In terms of sports bettors, is there a separate, never mind the rules of the commission, which reflect the recovery of actual gambling winnings. This aims at a lawsuit like this, a tort like this, would aim at the obligation of the participants to engage engage, you know, follow the rules and not dope their horses or engage in conduct that would disqualify their horse. It gets even more bizarre if you think about the fact that somebody might want to play havoc here on a betting run and not dope their horse, but dope somebody else's horse.
Well, that's... what makes you think that when I thought it was a shot that somebody else did walk behind to give the horse a shot in the ass and not their guys, right?
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, Turley, this has ramifications in some other places. So I've always thought that one of the reasons the NFL went absolutely nuts over the Spygate issue, and by absolutely nuts, I mean the minute the guy, the NFL investigator, saw the actual video of what the Patriots had been doing in terms of collecting information about other teams illegally, they not only you know, made a report about, oh, you know, the Patriots, Belichick did some terrible stuff, they destroyed every copy of the videotape in the conference room that they viewed them. They took a hammer and crushed every one of the videotapes and pulled the Mylar out and broke it and destroyed it, so that nobody could ever see it or get a look at it or ever make a comment about it, because, as I thought, what it showed was so revealing and indicated there was such an advantage for the Patriots that people would have you know, basically said you need to invalidate their championships and their wins, which would have had huge ramifications. And at the time, sports betting was not as
But I think everything like Lou, everything like that, though, once it's over, I mean, look, how far do you go with this? Suppose,
but see, it's not over.
But
for the betters, it would have been over.
What if you got it?
Wouldn't have been over.
What if you got? I won't say anything bad about it. What if you got a cheap shot artist like David? No, I used to play basketball against him all the time. He was not a cheap shot. But what if you got a cheap shot artist like David, and he takes a cheap shot on somebody in like the third quarter? And the refs flag him for, you know, 15 yards or whatever. And it turns out it is so outrageous that when the league views it, they decide he's going to be suspended for 4 games, and they suspend the ref for not kicking him out of the game. But, oh, by the way, in the fourth quarter, David scores the 2 winning touchdowns when he should have been tossed out. Now, how far do you go with this?
Well, I agree. I mean it's a difference. It's a difference between the kind of willful misconduct that steps outside the rules of the game and the kind of conduct, you know, willful misconduct that is inside. I mean, do you remember a guy named Dale Hackbart?
I remember the name.
Okay. I actually knew Dale. He played for the Vikings for a while. A thoroughly likable guy. But he had a reputation as being a cheap shot guy. And he's got a couple of famous tackles where he clotheslines people and, you know, horse collars people, just really takes them down hard. Well, somebody went after him in an NFL game and basically stomped on him and attacked him physically and tore his helmet off and beat him into, you know, almost unconsciousness in the game. And he sued the guy. And the NFL, the federal court appellate court said, look, when you get onto a football game or other athletic contest, there's a certain range of conduct that's within the rules, and you know, even if it breaks the rules, it's an expected level of conduct, and you're assuming the risk for that kind of conduct when you step out there. But that's not what happened here. This is so far outside of conduct expected, even on a football field, NFL football
field.
And when this happened, it was in the 70s. In any event, my point is, within the context of the game, there are certain things that are likely to happen, or you could say, well, that's impossible. There are certain things that happen that everybody says, okay, that is an expected aspect of the game, or not unexpected aspect of the game. But there's other conduct that is so far beyond the pale that it's not part of the game. And under those circumstances, the courts have ruled you've got a lawsuit.
He'll know. Who's the hockey guy about 10 years ago where the guy ran up behind him on the ice and whacked him over the head with a stick and really hurt him? And they said he was sued in court.
Yes, he was.
Yeah, I don't remember his name, But Lou, getting back to, you know, this is not Baffert's first time doing this.
That's exactly right.
He's got sanctioned. He's got sanctioned a month ago,
The other point I was going to make.
Right,
Dave Baffert's horse that went on to win the, didn't he have one that just won the Triple Crown a couple years ago?
Right.
Yeah.
So that horse was actually formally disqualified at Santa Anita, which was the qualifying race for the Kentucky Derby. That horse was found to have some drugs in its system. They should have disqualified him at Santa Anita, and if they had disqualified him at Santa Anita, he would not have been eligible to run in the Kentucky Derby, which would have disqualified him from that race and killed the Triple Crown. But they once the race had already been won at the Kentucky Derby by the time they got the test results, and rather than doing the principal thing, they pulled the determination.
Well,
you're right.
You know that you know more about this than most, but I'm going to say that once in a great while. I mean, guys, as they get older, sometimes if you're shaving all the time, you might get a shaving rash or something. If you do, and you call your doctor and you get some little thing and you whoop the Walgreens, and by the way, the stuff works like it's a miracle. 2 days later, you're good to go. I'm going to say, Lou, that if you had a pee in a cup after a softball game, you're done. Is it everything? They're talking about a skin, if what you can believe is true on this horse. It was a skin rash. And it was,
yes.
I mean, we're not talking about him shooting up and coming out looking like Arnold the horse. I mean
Barry Bonds the horse.
Yeah,
with a giant head.
we're not talking about it. But I'm going to say a lot of stuff that people have in their medicine cabinet in case they should get any kind of something for a skin rash is loaded with steroids.
No, this is exactly correct. By the way, this is why in the NFL, when I was doing the agent thing, you would talk to your players about the stuff that they would take, and you just said, look, here's the deal. Since you're getting tested right now, or you have the risk of getting tested, you never take anything without consulting me or consulting the team physician. And I don't care, unless it's, Coca-Cola, you don't put anything in your body that has not been blessed by some responsible medical official, because guys would take stuff the herbal medicine, holistic medicine element in the NFL back in the 90s and aughts was significant. Guys would read about some combination of steroids or drugs or natural ingredients that would give them recovery or speed recovery, and they'd take it. Well, even the natural stuff had banned substances that would show up on a drug test, and now you're in stage one of the NFL's drug testing policy, which basically means you never get out of it.
How many how many quarterbacks do you think in the off season were in Europe? Well, I guess you can do it here now. Were in Europe getting stem cell treatments on their shoulders? Everyone?
I think it's quite likely if they had money, they tried to do that.
Well, let's go back to the betting part just for a second.
That didn't result in banned substances showing up in their urine.
But it's because it was done in the off season.
No, because you can be tested during the off season and are tested during the off season.
But I mean, it's like finding with the growth hormone. Then now they differentiate between the stuff you take from somebody else and your own. Right? So
true.
But just to get back to the game part. Just because, I mean, the operative word there, I think, is game. And just because a bunch of people want to bet on it, I mean, I'll give you a down-home example, a bathroom example, potty humor. Chris Bryant had to leave the game the other night. I have no idea why. I don't know Chris from Adam. Let's say, for instance, he had a bad burrito for breakfast. And all afternoon, he's in and out of the can and says, I can play. And sure enough, the third inning, it's his turn to bat, and he's in the clubhouse. Okay? And he's taken out of the game. Now, does he owe the better money because he didn't tell somebody he's in the can in the afternoon? I don't think so. I'm sure some better would say.
Oh, no. I suspect the court would say, no, that's a risk of normal, eating, although you probably shouldn't be eating Chicago street food before a baseball game.
Well, does he have an obligation to say, by the way, this game lasts 4 hours, and every part of the last 2 hours of the last five I've been in the can, so I got a 50-50 chance of not making it past the fourth inning. Is he obligated to say that?
No, I don't think I don't think that would be an issue. On the other hand, somebody dopes Chris Bryant, or Chris Bryant himself takes a banned substance. So I mean, you're right. This could go way down a rabbit hole of how much is too much and whatever. Let's take the case in front of us. I think there's a potential issue with something like this for the bettors, that gigantic class of bettors who did not get paid off on this, and for some other people as well, maybe the sponsors. I mean, I was always of the opinion that Deflate or Spygate was such a big issue because they were terrified of the sponsors coming back to the NFL and saying, you know, you promised us a regular, you know, great game that was not irregular, and now we know that it was, and all of our fans are going to be, people that watch the shows are going to be disillusioned, so we're demanding a new contract with you guys. I always felt that was the...
Well, Lou, I don't think... We got to go to break here, but I don't think anybody would take that chance with a horse, with a topical ointment, if they knew the thing was loaded with steroids. Why would you?
I agree.
And it wasn't a topical ointment.
Well, I thought it was. I thought it was.
Else is a possibility.
I thought it was some kind of inflammation. I thought it was a topical ointment. It wasn't?
No, it was topical.
Yeah, I thought it was.
Okay, because it actually, what they said is it's an inflammatory use to relieve joint pains, and it is allowed, but in certain amounts.
Hey, if some is good, more must be better. You knew that from the trading floor, right?
Right.
That's the PVU. You've caused a rally in the market. SPVU is only down a buck now. NASDAQ futures is actually up 50. Who knows? He might actually try and bounce today. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now,
right now. Hello, welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. Dave Scatino on the board. We have Mr. Lou with us. I got to, when I'm done with this, or when you're done with traffic, weather, sports, I got a story about the lottery. And if Lou thinks racing might be crooked, what do I tell him about the lottery? Just saying. Our government.
State lotteries?
Yeah, our government at work.
Go with it. I know Illinois is awful.
SP futures up a buck and a half. NASA futures up 65. So we've raced back. We were down 20 when we came in. So we did a huge flip around here. Dow's still down 144. Over in Europe, we've got DAX down 205. That's 1.4%. FTSE down 142. 2%. CAC around down 66. 1%. So not much going on good there. Nikkei down another 699, 2.5%. Shanghai down 33, it's a full 1%. It's the first time they've been down. Hang Seng down 512, 1.8%. Just a way of review of yesterday's, let's say awful day. Dow was down 681, 2%. S&P down 89, 2.1%. NASDAQ down 357, 2.7%. So just, the weird part, it was very slow. It just kind of kept creeping. David, there was no action whatsoever other than the thing selling off.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
It's just very bizarre. A 10-year, 1.69, so that's unchanged. The bond, get a load of this, minus 0.10, is relentlessly is moving towards zero here. Japanese, how do you have nothing but inflation and negative interest rates? I mean, God, good Lord, what kind of a world have we created? Japan is 0.10, it's up 2 basis points. We've got oil down at $1.65, $64.43 is... Evidently, the Colonial Pipeline is back up and attempting to be running, although it does take 2 weeks to get oil from or gas from Houston to New York Harbor. But, you know, there's got to be stuff in the pipeline still, I would imagine. But when it's running, it won't take you, it's not like you're starting fresh. Brent down 166, 67.68. Natural gas down a penny at 295. RBOB down 4 cents, 211. It's the first drop we've had in RBOB in a while. A gold down 780, 1815. There's a little bit of pressures off here this morning. Silver down 25 cents, 26.98. Copper down 7 cents, 466. Haven't seen copper down in a while. But crypto is a big story this morning. Bitcoin down $4,600 as Elon Musk says, now he's not going to take it for some. First he was going to take it, now he's not going to take it. That guy is, if he's not trading this, I'd be stunned. David, what do you have for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
Good morning, 6:37 in Chicago. Today's weather, currently it's 45 degrees and sunny. It's going to be a nice day today, 64 and sunny. For our Phoenix listeners, it's start out to today, 70 and clear. It's going to be a hot one, 102 and sunny today. In traffic, a little messy this morning with our usual slowdowns on Kennedy. With road construction, I have two accidents to report. There's an accident on 294 South, right before Ridgeland. Three right lanes are blocked, and there's an accident on I-55 South before Illinois 53 with the two left lanes blocked. In sports, in the NBA, the Bulls play the Raptors tonight, and the Suns take on the Trailblazers. Last night in baseball, the Cubs lose the Indians in 10, 2-1, and the Sox beat up on the Twins, 13-8 to win. Now they're at 5 in a row. Diamondbacks lose to the Marlins 3-2. The NFL released their schedule. Bears are playing the first Sunday night against the Rams. And in horse racing, which we were talking about most of the morning, the Preakness is this Saturday. And will they allow Baffert's horses in? Back to you.
The horse racing has been the part that's come over the fence last. They're hurting as an industry. The chances of those guys not letting a potential Triple Crown winner in are zero. Just saying. Well, not zero, but
I'll be interested to see how that plays out. Here in Colorado, we're having a variation of that, which the variation is the same story, Chief, that you and I have talked about for many years, which is it's going to go whichever way gives people the most money. So here in Colorado, we've got a mask mandate. You know, you can gather X number, and it's loosening now. But there's a statewide, you know, mandate on masks. But my bet is, since the All-Star game is going to be played here in another month and a half, the betting money is that all of the mask mandates with respect to any association outside is going to be lifted magically just in time for them to fill Coors Field to capacity.
Are you going to have a vaccination card to get in?
That's a great question. And I just had a long discussion with my lovely wife, the employment lawyer here, last night about the whole issue of vaccine cards and how that's going to play out. Because, you know, so the question is whether a business can basically say, and of course we'll say this is a private business, whether a business can say, you've got to have and you've got to submit to this experimental vaccine before we let you in. And not only do you have to submit to it, you have to show us your medical information to come in and do that. And in an employment setting, I'm almost sure that's improper under the current Americans with Disabilities Act, and we get into a discussion about that if you're ever interested. It's technical. But on an admission to a voluntary event like this, interesting question. And of course, the vaccine cards are a joke.
Sure they are.
I mean, you could print 50 of them off, take your vaccine card that you just got for your shot, and just print 50 of them off on your printer on cardstock, and you could have your own little vaccine card industry. There's no identification on them. The cards themselves are not even numbered, so that there's some link between you and you know this particular piece of identification. So I don't see how you're going to demand vaccination. And in fact, here in Colorado, they're trying to pass a law. I doubt if it'll get through because it's a Democratic state. They're trying to pass a law that prohibits you from asking for vaccine cards or vaccine status in any setting.
Well, if the darn thing, if the vaccines are so foolproof, as long as you get one, what do you care about anybody else?
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, at some point, and I think it should be like today, the CDC is one of the themes I was going to talk about is just how our trust in experts should, especially public health policy expertise, should be completely vitiated now. But at some point, we are going to realize that now with the vaccine, this thing is like measles or mumps or even the flu, which is we need you to get a vaccine and you should get vaccinated, but if you don't, it's, you know, your own risk.
Well, let me tell you my story real quick on the lottery, because you go ahead and sue these guys better. But actually, before you came on, I mean, years ago, because you've been doing this stuff with me for a long time, and thank you for that. Kathy somehow or another got a guy on who's
it's 10, by the way, we just passed 10 years.
I think it might have been, maybe he...
Congrats.
Yeah, congrats. You remember the dude who was he was like the lottery gate guy.
Yes.
And, well, get a load of this, David. He comes on, and you know here's my experience with the lottery. I know that if nobody wins, it turns over to the next week, right? So if it gets big enough in the regular old lotto, which again is a pari-mutuel system like horses, although they don't pay out near as much in terms of percentages, at some point, if somebody wins it that week, they're actually going to pay out a hell of a lot more than they took in that week. So if there's any rationale to any of this stuff, I basically wait until the lotto gets to be like $8 million because there's no way they're taking in $8 million in the lotto. I'm not talking about these multi-state deals. And we grab a buck from everybody in the office, we go get it. Now, with all this great planning of mine, of course, we haven't won squat in 20 years. I think our biggest payoff is like $2, but at least there's some rationale behind it, right? But whenever you walk in there, though, you see these massive spools of these instant games. And inevitably, you will find somebody who probably shouldn't be paying them in terms of income. And I honestly believe, Lou, that this stuff, I mean, you've heard me rant before, and I won't do that today, about this being aspects of taxation that we don't care. When somebody says that this guy doesn't pay any taxes, well, I got news for you. When I lived at 70 West Huron, every Saturday I take my mom to breakfast and I go down and get coffee and hop in my Bronco. And there was this African-American gentleman who worked the streets at night. Nice guy. He'd make 20 bucks. He'd buy a quart of Coke, two things of Doritos, and 17 lottery tickets. I'm going to say that guy's taxation level is higher than anybody else in the country. And people will say that they don't know, you know, and the guy never won anything, right? So, anyway, but the spools, there might be like, you know, the instant ones, they'll
the scratch-offs you're talking
scratch-offs,
about.
Scratch-offs, yeah. But there's like 50 of them in every convenience store, right? And everybody knows every one of the different games. I mean, there must be geniuses on that stuff. Well, get a load of this, Dave. Maybe, even though you're a cynical Southside guy, suppose there's two big winners in say 10,000 tickets. Well, the state, if the two winners come up, like in the first 5,000 or 500 tickets, they continue to sell the other 9,500 with the sign up there talking about the winners when they know there's no winners left. Or even more insidious, if they sell 9,000 of the 10,000 and nobody won, so you know the two winners are left in the 1,000, they pull the game.
Now that's outrageous.
Yeah.
I can see the sales going on for because of the logistics issues and pulling all those tickets. But to go out and pull the tickets when you know and remove any chance of winning is outrageous.
Yeah. Well, because if you came down to the last ticket, you've only paid one winner. Guess what? The last ticket's a winner, right? It's like counting cards at blackjack. So they don't want to sell that if they know it's a winner.
So do they look? Do you think that the people who run the lottery, because there's a lot of corruption in that system when I lived there, do you think the people that run the lottery look at that as free money?
I think they just
don't pay it out, and that can be distributed however they want.
It's part of income. Hey, we didn't pay it out.
Yeah, wasn't it all supposed to go to schools when it first started?
Oh yeah, it's talking about BS.
Oh yeah, that's part of the corruption issue that I was mentioning. I just think that if you're doing that, if you're in the practice of doing that, pulling the winning tickets out, and then there's a huge opportunity.
No, I didn't say they pulled the winner. I didn't say they pulled the winners out. They pulled the game.
Well, they pulled the game.
Yeah.
Which is the same thing as pulling the winners. They pulled the game.
Well, it's not the same as digging in and grabbing a winner.
Somewhere there's a pot of whatever, $10,000 that should have been paid out that won't be paid out.
Correct.
I would think that there would be a tremendous temptation to just say, well, that's free money, and we could do with that whatever we want.
By the way, Louis,
we're paying ourselves.
And you, I don't know if you're keeping count, because I actually do on the gambling part, because I like to gamble. I used to before I became a trader. This is the fourth time, since we're all getting up there, in our lifetime in Illinois, that gambling is going to save your ass. You didn't know that, did you?
I don't gamble, so I don't see how it's going to save me.
Well, okay. We had, like David mentioned, we had needed money for schools. So a couple other states came up with the lottery, and we were jealous as all get out that they're getting this money and we're not. And, of course, the usual crap that people from Illinois were traveling to Ohio just to play the lottery, and that's really our money.
Yeah.
So, you know, so then we get the lottery. It's going to save the state. Well, guess what? It didn't. Well, then the next thing was, well, the problem with the racetracks is not everybody can get there in Arlington Park. So then we need off-track betting. So we put up, what was it, David, 10 off-track betting places, or 8. And there's going to be so much money there that's going to save the state that's broke. Then the next one was casinos, right? That was going to save us.
Right.
It didn't. And now it's sports gambling. So this is the fourth iteration of me and all people like me are going to be saved by gambling. And guess what? We're not going to be saved this time either, Lou.
Well, the short answer is they're looking for some formula that is going to cause virtually everybody to throw money into the state's pot voluntarily. That's what they're looking for.
Whether it's
gambling or you know, casinos, whatever it's going to be, that's what they're looking for.
I can
show you. They'll never be satisfied. It's like taxation. There'll never be enough.
I will. And the thing is, I have this discussion with Mr. Weber all the time, that there's two levels of the chessboard, Lou, and I want to talk a little bit about money supply and inflation here in a minute. There's two levels of the chessboard. To somebody to say, Pritzker or whoever, I'm going to allow you to have to bet on the Cubs or the Bears. Okay, fine. Instead of using the local bookie. For you, that might be something you really enjoy. Okay, and I used to like to go to Vegas and so forth and play blackjack and try and count. And actually like craps at all. The game was always too fast for me. But Maddie needs to understand, I think, that from the governor's point of view, he doesn't care about Maddie Weber. All he cares about is this is a tax. Collectively, they're all going to lose, right? And I don't care if one or two guys happen to win. I don't care if this chief guy is a little bit better at blackjack than the next person. The fact is, collectively, they're all going to lose, right? So, and it's, but I will show you places, Lou, one of the couple places, Audrey and I, we have our circle of places we go on Saturday night. Well, one of them happens to be a place, it's a bar, and it has the, actually two of them, have the new video poker in there. That, well, it's relatively new. And you know what, Lou? They don't go through a casino at all. The state's the casino.
Right. I know that.
And I could point you out, this lady walks through, her name is June. What's with June? Well, June makes $100 in tips every day, and before she leaves, every day she blows 50 on the video poker before she goes home to her kids. That's gambling the way the politicians want it. It's that when it's not a guy like the chief in 1978 that put $300 in his pocket, which is a lot of money back then, flew out to Vegas and played blackjack, and if he lost his $300 and he came home, but everything was all paid for and he left. That it's not like that. You're getting I've read numbers, 85% of your money comes from your population, and most of that from people who probably can't afford it. It's nothing but a tax. It's nothing but a tax.
Oh no, I you're not going to get any arguments from me on that, and I bow down to the genius who said, you know what, if we can get people to screw themselves, it saves us a lot of trouble.
Oh God, yeah.
And that's what they're focusing on. Look, I wanted, before we
can I get you a
bail here?
Can I get you a comment on the state of the Fed? I promise I'll only lose 2 minutes. How do we go from, we're now in May, I'm going to say in February, I hate to use the word buffoons, but these guys are telling us no way, no how, no inflation, never going to change policy, blah, 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 to we might have a little bit, but it might be transitory, to now we get. Yesterday, the guy from the St. Louis Fed, Lou, he came out, it was the day before. I really wanted it to be the gong show or get the hook, because I just wanted to save the guy. He starts talking about, well, the inflation's going to be pretty high for a while, but we're still pushing this 2% number because that's the real inflation as we see it, and there is no real inflation. And even if we get a lot higher than that, we're not going to pay attention, like say if it went to 10, we're not going to pay attention to the 8 because that's transitory. That's coming right back. That's because of shortages and stuff. We're just going to pay attention to the 2. And I'm thinking, how does he know the difference between one or the other? And what is he even talking about? To the point where I'm like, these guys, they've taken this to the absolute nth degree here that we just need them off the stage. We need them to resign. I mean,
That's not happening.
No, but they're so far out on this policy thing. They're out of their mind. What are they talking about?
I'm going to go back to a theme that we've talked about before. This is ideology running into reality and refusing to acknowledge it, which is what ideologues do. They don't acknowledge reality. This is the functional equivalent of, you know, the idea that we can chop our oil and gas imports and production, turn us from a gas producing and exporting or oil importing or exporting country from an oil exporting country to an oil importing country, and things are going to run just the way they always have, with no slack for any kind of pipeline hack or pipeline disaster or whatever. This is the folks that are doing this, and both parties have ideologues, but the Democrats for some reason seem to be worse right now. This is a collection of people who say the world looks like this, and if it doesn't look like this, then it ought to. And I'm going to operate on the assumption that it's doing what it ought to do rather than what is really happening. This is the same I mean, I'm not going to blame what's happening in the Middle East on Joe Biden and his idiotic foreign policy. I think there's a link, but I don't think it's cause and effect. But the idea that you would dump $300 million onto a corrupt government, which then promptly cancels the elections that it had scheduled and foments discontent within its population to such an extent that it feels obligated to go out and start riots in Israel to deflect its population from the fact that, oh, you were supposed to have an election here, but we just canceled it.
Lou, I'm going to ask you a very serious question. Don't have to answer it. And you know I'm very, very pro-Israel. They're our best ally, probably. I just can't, in the back of my neck, the hair keeps going up, and I get this amazing connection between Netanyahu finally being voted out and all of a sudden this stuff happening, and I'll bet he ends up not leaving.
What's happening right now, and I've been doing a lot of reading on this, because this...
That's why I'm asking you, because you're way ahead of me.
The problem we face right now is that this is a very complicated situation with a lot of dominoes. But let me tell you where the dominoes start. The dominoes start, I think, with the Palestinian Authority emboldened, I believe, because I don't like Joe Biden, emboldened by the Biden administration's reinstatement of our monthly or our yearly stipend to them, to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars, and emboldened by Iran now saying, hey, we got a friendly government in Washington, decides it's going to cancel the elections that are coming down the track because it's going to get its head handed to it by Hamas. And the Palestinian Authority will do anything it can to stay in power. So they cancel the elections. Their own people are upset about this. And so the Palestinian Authority goes back to the playbook that it's used a number of times, which is we're going to distract you from this situation by instead directing your attention to a legal process that has been playing out in Israel for a number of years over these homeowners near the Temple Mount who are finally going to be evicted for not paying rent. And that's a legal process that's been running in Israel. It was a minor cause celeb there. But the Palestinian Authority says, we're not going to stir this up now. And so they push their buttons, and you see the craziness going on at the Temple Mount with the riots and the attacks on Israeli police and the general civil unrest there. That then causes Hamas to say, hey, what are we, chopped liver? We're going to lose this election now because they've stalled it. We have to demonstrate that we can be just as anti-Israel as the Palestinian Authority. So they chug a few rockets over, which causes the predictable response from the Israelis.
Oh, yeah.
who are on a hair trigger anyway, because they know now that a hostile government is in place in Washington, a government hostile to their interests is in place in Washington right now. So they respond to those rockets, at which point Hamas says, you know what? We got a lot of extra rockets that we managed to buy. We're flush with cash.
Where do these guys get all these things?
Iran just received billions from the United States, so we're going to fire everything. And that's what's been going down.
Yeah, I wish I could figure out one day what the...
I think it's going to get worse.
I think both sides have... The government on both sides have reasons to... The timing on this. I don't think this Netanyahu is going to leave.
I think he'll go away. But I think right now, the with the electoral instability in Israel, the Hamas people thought and the Iranians thought, hey, this is the perfect time to challenge Israel and see if they can actually mount an effective response while their government's in chaos. What is happening? And this is I don't know if the Hamas people counted on this. You know, Israel's intelligence is pretty good.
Oh yeah,
and so
yeah.
they are systematically, you know, killing as many of the Hamas leadership as they can, and are basically decapitating the organization, and it's happening in a very structured way. They're being reasonably careful. You know, they're calling the people in these apartment buildings where the Hamas has been operating, and saying you need to get out of there. They're taking down that infrastructure, but they're also killing the individuals that they could identify as leadership. And I'm not sure the Hamas folks kind of calculated this in there, but at the same time, since they're basically proxies for Iran, you know, the Iranians don't care.
Well, I thought we got to dash here, bud. But
we just pull another one and throw them in there.
I really thought that back when Yasser Arafat would have been a little less of whatever the hell he was, actually could have probably had peace at that time, and he managed to screw it up. I thought Clinton got real close.
What's happening right now is a more direct version of what was happening in the 70s and 80s with the PLO. You know, they were proxies for a number of other people, mainly the Soviets.
Well, that's what happens all over the place.
What's happening in Palestine right now is these people are proxies. The Hamas is proxies for Iran.
Yeah, it's
and the Iranians are going to. So the question now is, if the Hamas stuff keeps up, does Iran push Hezbollah out of Lebanon to launch their rockets on Israel?
It kind of goes to show you can't let these situations fester decade after decade, because that's what they do. They fester. And there needs to be some sort of there needs to be a peace, for God's sake. There's increasing population, there's increasing arms. It's a mess. It's like before World War I, Lou. I mean, we'll talk to you next week, bud. Good stuff. SP Futures flat, and SP Futures up 54, so we're way better than we were when we came in. Let's hope we keep doing it. We don't want another day like yesterday. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
But hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howie. He's Mr. Dave Scatina on the board. SP Futures now up a buck. NASDAQ Futures up 59. With us, we have Mr. Dan Janitis, and he's happy as a clam because he bought NASDAQ down 50 points a half hour ago, and now he's up a hundo, and he's lighting a cigar. What was the guy, the coach of the Celtics that would light the victory cigar? Was it Red Auerbach?
Auerbach, yeah. Yes.
So you got your victory cigar going at this hour in the morning?
There may be. There may be. I don't know. We're, I guess down here in Florida, we're kind of glad to hear that there's, gasoline on the way, so.
Can't you control your old people?
There's some cigars being, what?
Can't you control your old people?
You know, when it comes to things like panic and, you know, hoarding, no, you'd think it would be a little easier, but we don't even get our gasoline from that pipeline. We get it from, ships that come into the ports, you know, from the Gulf of Mexico. And so it's just, it was, you know, somewhat comical, but then at the same time, you know, a little bit bizarre that, you know, there are lines and that there's all kinds of talk about this very short-term event. But yeah, I think a little bit of relief today at least.
So, Dan, I was talking to one of my, let's say somebody very close to me, without naming names. I won't say whether male or female or anything, although I'm sure people can read between the lines. So I'm having this conversation, and they're saying how there's shortages in Florida. And I said, well, people essentially made those shortages because
they all
went and filled up. And I've been talking all week. It's actually, unfortunately, I remember some of this stuff from the 73 stuff, and nothing's changed.
Yes.
You know, the lion's share of the gasoline inventory of this country is in people's tanks. Right. And if everybody decides to fill up tomorrow, you totally blow away whatever is in storage or wherever is anywhere. So of course, at the end of the conversation, this significant person to me says, well, you know, I went and filled up. I wasn't going to be last. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. I wasn't going to be last. I'm like, that's just swell. I can remember my stepfather was kind of an odd duck. David knew him well. In 73, I was under instructions, if I saw a line to pull in it means like they had gas, even if you got three-quarters of a tank, top off. And I'm like, what are we doing that for? But people did that. I mean, nobody in line needed gas. I mean,
right.
Anyway, the weird part is now those guys, they won't sell any gas now for the next 2 weeks because everybody's got a full tank.
Right, no, exactly. Yeah, it comes back, yeah. It's a little bit like what happens in the market, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know, this is that sort of fear of missing out, and, you know, what we've seen over the last few years, that fear of missing out, and then you're buying in at the high price because the price keeps going up, right, to sell a little bit of supply that's left, and then all of a sudden a week later it's back down to the price where it was, you know, a few weeks ago. So,
Dan, very serious, I got a very serious question for you. Somewhat personal, because I had the same conversation with somebody yesterday. What do you tell somebody when they ask you about Bitcoin?
I tell them that there are better people to talk to about it, because I like to think that I've learned a lot in this business over 35 years, but there are some areas that are not my areas of specialty. I personally, for the style of management that we do at Kratos, it does not fit, because it's going to be a very volatile story, and it's certainly going to be one where you can make money. I don't think it's proven itself yet in terms of its application. I like the theory behind it. I like having like a central currency, if you will. I do like that. I like the theory behind it, but it hasn't worked itself out. And it's like a lot of the tech stories that we tend to shy away from, or we let someone else do it. We usually let the high growth managers take on those stories. It's not going to be a sleep at night stock. It's going to be something that you're going to have to follow pretty carefully. You're going to have to really get in and do your research on knowing where to place your bets, or when, you know, and when especially. And it's changing constantly. So it's a technology that is evolving. And, you know, I would say for your individual who wants to have a little exposure and watch it day to day, fine. But don't try to... You know, don't go all out on it. You know, don't bet all your money on it. But, you know, have an allocation and watch it carefully. You know, watch it very carefully and try to learn as much as you can about all the parts and pieces of it that are changing very, very rapidly. So that would be my take on it.
I should have transferred these couple people to you, because I started out by doing the exact same thing you did. I said, look, I'm not the guy to talk about it. I don't know that much about it, and I'm just not the right person to talk about. No, come on, sir. What's your opinion? I said, okay, if you want to beat it out of me, I think they're all worthless. I don't buy any of this crap. That some guy came from the mountaintop, invented it, and then went back and there is no central control, there's nobody behind it. I don't buy any of that crap.
That's true too.
And I said, but just don't talk to me. And I also know people have made a fortune having it, and I haven't. So I hope it's not jealousy or whatever. But so just, you know, talk to somebody else. I mean, I'm just not the guy. I mean,
it's generally timing when you have that. I had a client say that his, you know, wife does a little dabbling on the side, and she's made some money in it, and says, can you do that for me? Like, you know, why don't you let your wife continue to do it? If she has any questions, call me. But it just doesn't, it also, it does make logical sense to me, especially as a long-term investor.
You know, we should have done Nano.
All new technology. I don't believe, you know, there's some new technologies that I think make a lot of sense. But that's one that I still think is still evolving.
I think, Dan, we should have done is about 4 or 5 years ago. And David knows on the south side, there's a couple of them in Beverly. One's at the currency exchange, and one is at this food store that's, like, not even the nicest food store. And the vending machines, I think my brother, years ago, decided he wanted to get involved, so he bought, like, 25. I think the fee was $10 to buy 25 hours worth of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, we could have done really well with the vending machine and not care where they went. Imagine that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what do you do on a day like yesterday when everything is collapsing? You see this, the Fed now, without going into it because I've talked about it all week, they look like a bunch of bumbling fools about this inflation right now. I mean, yesterday when they said when the inflation goes up, we're still zeroing in on the 2% that's real and not like the 6% that, what is he talking about? But anyway, so what does it do for your bond value? Because they're hanging in there with this TLT. It's not down very much.
Right, yeah. So our on the bond side, we, steady eddies. You know, we're in those names that will do very well during this environment. They're high yield. They're shorter. They're short term, so they're not going to have that interest rate risk. I totally agree with you. I think what's happening is that we're losing, a lot of investors are going to lose confidence in the Fed and the decision makers and the way they're even going about looking at inflation. So what we do on a day like yesterday is we buy. So I was in there buying towards the end of the day, and we're buying those names that we like on the equity side. We're buying the infrastructure plays still. We're buying the, Maztec was down, I think, 5%, and we love Maztec. So that was the, the company that does, they're involved in the infrastructure side on the, cell towers and maintenance and pipelines and pipeline maintenance and all that. And they're just a steady eddy. But that, yesterday is an opportunity to, from my point of view on the equity side, to add to those names that are really solid names that have sold off in sympathy with everything else.
Well, Dan, two questions.
It's definitely not the time to panic, even though some of the officials seem to be panicking a bit here. It's really not the time to panic. And my thing about inflation, we've talked about this, we're in a secular trend. We're in this long-term secular trend. You've got to go back to pre-COVID to look at what were the issues been, before we started this, a year and a half ago? What were the issues that were going on? Well, there were concerns about wage inflation. There was concerns about reaching full employment. And we're kind of coming back to those concerns again today. Even though we're in a different world, there's still, if you kind of follow that long-term secular path, days like yesterday aren't going to concern you too much because you know that we are going in the direction of higher rates. We are going in the direction of higher inflation. We just don't know exactly how we're going to get there. What's really obvious, I think, as I mentioned before, you look at the consumer. The consumer's seeing higher food prices, higher gas prices. The consumer is, seeing any type of activity, used cars, for example, any purchases they're making, generally higher. And then you're also seeing the company faced with higher wages, having to pay wages. I mean, I've done a bunch of earnings calls in the last few weeks, and every single company has the same concern. Every CEO tells me that they're concerned about hiring, that they're concerned about finding people. That's one of the headwinds that they have. The other headwind is pricing. So sometimes they can pass along the pricing to the customer, but not all the time and not forever. So they're the ones who are seeing it already, and so that's why I have more confidence in what they have to say. I think we are going to see continued growth, and it's going to be a day-to-day thing in terms of, you can't watch the market too much day-to-day, but look at days like yesterday as a buying opportunity.
Well, two things, Dan. Let's look at the one you're talking about, the infrastructure play. If you're in, the OEX side that I was for a long time, and you see people do bad. I'm going to try and make this brief. If you see the S&P futures, or now there's all kinds of futures, but you see the futures basically get clobbered, and they're down. And David was on the floor for a bazillion years, too. people are going to buy those futures and they're going to sell stocks, whatever they feel that are in their basket. Now, they're not going to do all 500. Most people are going to do, you know, 50 or 60, depending on how accurate you want to be with your basket. Some guys are going to do 40. Some people might do 10, and then, you know, it switches a risk. But if your stock is one of the 10, you may think Microsoft's the best stock on earth, and you could be right. But on that given day, if it's 4% of the S&P, it's going down. Nobody cares about Microsoft, so it's going to be the baby with the bathwater. So the strategy like you're talking about, even if I think the rest of the market might go a little lower, I think that they might have spanked Microsoft way too much, and I still want to be a buyer. But now, the stocks you're talking about, they're not really part of any basket, so nobody's selling them that because they have to, for lack of a better term. They're just going down. But also, I think the other thing that I want to ask you about is, just in general, if inflation gets to the point where it is 10-year, you know, and I'm looking, been doing some research here, I'm going to maybe talk about tomorrow, and how fast these rates can go up. I mean, the Fed is giving you this, I'm going to say BS, that if inflation springs out, that they can raise rates to like 2 or 2.5% and they can fix it. Well, guess what? Last time it happened, they raised rates to like 15% to fix it. So this idea that it's going to be a minor tweak on that part, I don't know where they're getting that. they're getting that from the bottom of the swimming pool. I don't know. There's no way that a 3% rate fixes an inflationary, whatever the hell they're talking about. So, you know, and I think you also have to ask yourself, what if these rates are 7%? Even the really good companies, what is that going to do to them or their valuations? I think some of the stuff that you're into, it might not affect them all that much. A little bit, maybe.
Not as much.
But still, they're not going to be hard for them to double over 2 years if that's happening. I mean,
they're being straight up with us saying that they do see these headwinds. They're seeing, they're also seeing, you know, they're beating on the top, and so they're, you know, their revenues are, you know, are strong. Their cash flow is strong. And these are the companies that we tend to, like, or ones that already have, you know, well capitalized. So they're not going to be, you know, they're not necessarily the companies that have leveraged themselves a lot or that need to leverage themselves to grow. So that's an advantage of doing our homework. But no question, you know, it's hard to hide in an environment where rates are going higher. And I think, as you mentioned earlier, and I totally agree with you that because rates are so low, a percentage increase in rates, you know, to go from, you know, 169 to 250 or whatever, is a percentage-wise is a huge increase. So it may not be a lot in terms of percentage points, but in terms of percentage of the whatever the rate is, the 10-year rate is, it's pretty high. So we're, you know, you could double rates, and that's doubling of rates is going to have a major impact on every company, even though it would be, you know, historically they'd still be considered low. My advice has been, you know, from the beginning, stay away from long-term bonds, stay away from 10-year treasuries, stay away from 10-year investment-grade corporates. There's not much to gain there. And although there was a short-term period here where you could have made a little money, you're going to be losing that money now. And I think longer term, that's, story is going to get worse. So from an investor's point of view, be careful about going long with treasuries, and that would include munis. Stay on the shorter end with munis, stay on the shorter end with your higher grade. I think I had mentioned a couple of the names like that we own that are ETFs that are short-term munis, like SUB, ticker symbol SUB and ticker symbol SHYD. I think munis are going to do well. Municipal bonds will do well, but stay on the short end again. The 5 to 7 year area looks attractive on the curve. If you look at the, you know, the yield pickup you get between threes and fives, and then between fives and sevens, or between fives and tens. So you're, you know, that's a place that you can stay, but I wouldn't really go any longer than that, on your bond purchases. And I would still be looking at preferred stocks because there's still a need for yield. I mean, each week that goes by, that spread on high yield bonds is tightening. So the average spread, I think, is 285 is what I saw recently. You know, it was 365 just a few months ago when we were talking. So alternatives are these, you know, high quality preferred stocks. You know, a couple of the names like Blue Knight and Chicken Soup for the Soul that we've mentioned. Self, if you're looking for a REIT that does public storage, that's done very well, and it continues to do well. And so we hold these names because these are the areas of the market that tend to do very well in this environment of rise in rates. The other area that, the other type of bond that does well, fixed income investment that does well, are variable rate notes, floating rate note funds. FLRN is one. BLKN is the bank loan fund, and it resets every 6 months. So with higher rates, you're still getting a decent return, and you're participating in those higher rates rather than having to wait till maturity. So there are alternatives in this environment. I would not put all them. I definitely would stay out of that longer end of the curve.
Dan, I had you get calls all the time too, but I get a call from somebody yesterday who's been listening to us for a while, and of course he's had his, I won't say the name, Vanguard, but you know, he's in your basic pizza pie stuff, and the dude's an older guy.
Yes.
And he's got his, you know, 45% in stocks and 55% in bonds. And I said, well, are the bonds longer term? Yeah, I think so. I don't know. They're in a bunch of different, you know, he's got the usual routine, you know, the big cap Bob and the mid cap Mike, and he's probably got, you know, 15 pages of statement that don't amount to much of anything other than he's in. And I said, by the way, how long term are you on the bonds? I don't know. I said, well, why are you in all that stuff? He said, well, I'm diversified. And I said, in whose mind? You know?
Yeah.
I mean, if these rates go to 6%, the whole thing's going to come tumbling down. Well, why is that? I said, well, you're going to get paid on your bonds. You're going to get your dividend. I mean, you're going to get your interest,
and
you'll get paid. I mean, but you're not, your stuff is going to look pretty lousy for a while. You know, plus if you got a 30-year bond, you know, you might not live 30 years. I mean, the guy's like 70-something. Like, Albie does live 30, obviously. But, I mean, do people actually think that when you have such a, when the entire investment community has been driven by the Fed and 0.5% rates, that any of this stuff is not gonna move together? The only thing that might not is some of the stuff you have.
Yeah, that's exactly why we have it. But I totally agree with you. Yeah, there's I'm not gonna say there's no place to hide, but I think there are places to you know, we're anticipating higher rates. There are ways that you can make money again. Floating rate notes do well. There are certain areas that we know, like generally the interest rate sensitive stocks tend to do better. Preferred stocks I keep pushing because preferreds are a way that people can still get yield because they're still chasing yield. And, you know, you're right. You're going to get whipsawed if you're on the long end. There's no place to hide. So, you know, for all these years that we've seen, right over a decade, we've seen basically rates going in one direction. Oh yeah, you can always make money in treasuries. You know, stay safe. I'll put money in, you know, 10 or 30 year treasuries. And now you're going to find out that you know, that's not where you want to be, because that's where you could probably get hurt the worst in this environment. I think each company is going to be different. We've talked about this. Stock selection is extremely important in this environment right now. We're not in that environment we were a few years ago where everything was going up in sync. Now things are going up and you know, certain sectors are going up, like tech has had its ups and downs that have been fairly extreme or fairly noticeable, I should say, and then the switch to more value names. And now I'm hearing, you know, the switch to more smaller names, which would be good for us, but we don't necessarily need that, those additional investors. We're generally, the investors that are in these small names have done their homework, and, you know, you stay with these companies.
Dan, do you try and, when you talk to these guys, and you got to be obviously careful what you say, because, you know, you don't want to sound like some buffoon at the White House quizzing the president, but, I mean, you try and determine where they are on the inflation, I use the term, the inflation scale. And I just saw this thing come across on TV, and McDonald's is being philanthropic, and they're going to raise, I guess, in their own stores, they're going to raise the rates to $15 from 10 or 11. I thought that's what it was. I mean, I don't know.
Please, yeah.
I'm going to say that, okay, that's one thing, and it sounds philanthropic, but if they raise the rates and other stuff, even remotely, even if it's like 5%, I'm going to say you can blow away at $4 an hour in a second. I mean, if you give somebody, like at the Dunkin' Donuts over here, they had the girls that were in there, and they, because the city went from, like, I think 10, what was it, David, 10 and a half to 12 or something a couple of years ago. The city went, and they raised their coffee prices, from $2.70 to $3, okay, and for a big one. And I'm thinking, all right, these girls probably do 200 of these an hour, maybe 300. I mean, 300 times 30 cents is a lot more than the $6 more you're going to give the three girls. You're not even on the same planet.
Right. Yeah. No, absolutely. It's a volume. It becomes a volume business, and they have to make up for it somehow. And the other thing too is that they may, you know, you might be saying like McDonald's doing it for philanthropic reasons, but really what's going to come down to is they're doing it because they're going to have to do it at some point. I mean, because their employees are going to go elsewhere if they can get $15 at, you know, another fast food chain, or in the case of, you know, I think of like stores like, Home Depot or Target, which are on about every block here in South Florida, and they're the same situation. You know, one raises it to 15, and then the other one's still stuck at 12. And so, you know, people are going to say, you know, they're offering better benefits, a better work environment, and so it's going to be. I do think there is going to be a struggle with labor, and I'm hearing it directly from people. And it's not just at that level; it's also at the level of, you know, engineers. So we're talking about infrastructure building and all that, and engineers are going to be in higher demand as time goes on. You know, architects and engineering firms are hiring, and they're, if you look at the help wanted lists for architects and engineers, it's still pretty long. And in my whole history, that has meant that the economy will continue to grow. I mean, we're always having this balancing effect of growth with, a certain amount of stability, that comes with that. And it's really going to be about the timing. And I think we want to have confidence in the Fed that they're going to do the right thing and that they're not going to act too far one way or another, and that they are going to act when they need to. But I think that, like, at least for us, I get my best information from companies and also from having done this for so long. And I'd be concerned if we start seeing runaway inflation, or if we start seeing
I think we already are seeing it. I mean, we've been seeing it for years, and I think it's so bizarre, Dan. I think that the wages, and again, I'm no tree hugger kind of guy, but the idea that companies, after a whole year or 14 months of inflation, and have a restaurant or whatever, to think somebody's waiting by the phone to get their $10 an hour job back. What planet
not
are
happening.
You? Yeah, what planet are you on? And I'm going to say that last year, if you were to take, I'll never be able to prove this, but I'll bet you a dollar. Was it $5, Mortimer and the other guy bet, and trading places? I'll bet you that the top 500 people that took advantage of the stock run up last year and cashed in their stock options are going to make more than the rest of the pay they've given everybody else in the country in their company. The guy from Palantir that made the billion one last year. There's no way on earth he could double everybody's salary and it's not going to be a billion one in his place. I mean, the guys up top did so much better than the poor guy going from $11 to 15. It's not even close. And I don't know where 15 grabs you, because that's 30 grand a year. That's still less than the, and every place I go.
I live in a place like Chicago at that.
Well, but every place I go, the other day I spent $5.07 for a cup of coffee. You better be paying somebody $15. If you're paying that guy $10, you should be shot, for God's sake. God's sake.
Absolutely. I noticed one of the barometers that I used, and I would definitely say this was the truth before we hit the COVID environment early last year, I pay a lot of attention to the level of service you get at a restaurant or even at a coffee shop. And when you start seeing that go down in the same, you know, I'm not getting the same level of service, or going for a beer and there being four guys behind the bar talking to each other rather than trying to come over and wait on you and your friend, it's that is when you know that there's an issue with wage inflation, you know, and that's when you know that there's going to be an issue with, you know, places in retail are going to want to hire the people with the best customer service skills, because that's what brings people back. So I think we were there before all this happened, and I agree with you. You know, it's, we're going to continue to see this inflation spiral, and then people are going to frankly get used to, people working in these positions are going to get used to a higher wage, and it's going to be hard to, you know, it's going to be hard to attract.
Well, when you have lumber, when you have lumber prices going up three and four times, and you get a guy, if I'm going to say that if you put you and me and David in the lumber aisle at Home Depot, and you put us on some sort of a program where we would get something of what we sold, we'd be helping people pick out the best 2x4s. We'd be saying, "You sure you got enough? You don't want to get an extra one or two?" I guarantee you that we'll make more in 5 minutes for that company than they're paying us that hour. When you're talking $8 a 2x4, for God's sake. I mean, the value added at these prices. I mean, I went to one of my favorite restaurant haunts, one of the places that I went the day before everything shut down last March 16th, and they, one of their specials was a stuffed pepper, not peppers, pepper.
Yeah,
$24. I'm going,
oh wow,
Jesus Christ. I mean, what does a pepper cost you? 50 cents? it's got to be 8 to 1. I think we're going to see a lot of that all over the place, and people are going to go, what am I doing out?
And the demand is going to continue past there. We're talking about this transient period, but the demand is going to continue and continue, and especially as masks start coming off and people can travel without having to put a mask on, and you can go out to you can get in a hotel, or you can go. When more and more of the restrictions are lifted in places, I mean, they're mostly lifted here already in Florida, but in other states where people are traveling or even overseas, the more that gets lifted, the more comfortable travel gets again, the more, you know, it's not going to just stop. This isn't going to be a one-time event. It's going to continue, and people are going to have more income, and they're going to demand more, or they're going to want more, and the demand side of the equation will continue to pick up, which I think is going to be the balance of the positive balancing effect for the market and for the economy going forward. So
it'll be interesting next week. What do you think we're talking about? Are we saying the market coming back? We're going to see interest rates keeping going, are going to keep going up, or what? The Fed going to do anything? What do you think the next week is in your crystal ball?
Yeah, I think that the trend is higher, and I think that it doesn't go up in a straight line. So, you know, talking about the 10-year, I would say that we keep going higher. Now, it all depends on what, you know, what we hear in the media and what, you know, the level of confidence that investors have in the Fed and in what the real numbers are. But from my point of view, this just keeps going. You know, so we're going to continue to see, we're at that part of the cycle, it's the credit cycle, where rates go higher. And where there's going to have to be a move by the Fed at some point. And it's going to have, you know, timing is everything in this business, and hopefully it comes at a time when people realize that we need it, and that won't, you know, keep investors in the market. And
well, you know what, though, Dan, after 30 years, it's going to be a shock. It's been 30 years. August of '82 is when we started coming down on interest rates. I mean, it's been a long time.
It has been a long time. So I think that the cycle is changing. It's shifting.
All right, bud. Thank you very much
for the shift, but it's happening.
Knock him dead this week, buddy. We'll talk at you next week. S&P futures now up now. NASDAQ futures up 76. We're turning this a little bit of a rally. Thank God. After yesterday, we'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks,
stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley, Mr. James Catina on the board. SP Futures up 8 now. I'm trying to rally this pig. We'll see if we can continue to do that. But we get the rest of the stuff going on here. I was reading the inflation numbers. We're going to go over those for a second when we get Jan in. With the individual stocks, we've got Boeing up 191. Boeing's been crushed the last few days, so it's making a little bit of a comeback. Dow futures are up 5 over in Europe. We've got the DAX not only down 92.6%, FTSE down 96.4%. They've come back some. CAC around down 33.5% over in Asia. We've got the Nikkei down another 699. They were down a bunch yesterday. It's 2.5%. Shanghai down 33.9%. Hang Seng down 512, 1.8. So we've got potential war over in Palestine. We've got Israel-Palestine. We've got the only good news, I guess, we got the pipelines is back up somewhat, right, David? So we got some good news, I guess.
Right.
Yesterday, Dow was down 681. S&P was down 89. NASDAQ down 357. So no prisoners there if you were long. Bonds down 1 basis point, 1.68. However, the Bund is minus 0.10. It's high as I've seen that in like a real long time. And at 2 ticks a day, we're probably a couple of weeks away from maybe being positive. And that'd really be something. Japan, 0.10 up 2 basis points as well. UK up 2 basis points at 0.90. Oil down 133, 64.75. Brent down 133, 68.01. Natural gas down a penny. RBOB down 4 cents, but still at 211, even though the pipeline is evidently back up and running. The gold down 560, 1817. Silver down 19 cents, 2704. Copper down 4 cents, 468. Crypto, big story here as well. We can't even keep up with these big stories. Elon Musk came out and said he don't want no snicking Bitcoin buying one of his cars. I don't know what he was talking about, but he had it down $5,600. Now it's only down 4,000. It's bounced off that 50,000 number. Seems like it wants to, I'm not a technical guy, David, but it seems like it likes to bounce back off this 50,000 number. Although I wouldn't put technical stuff on this stuff. It just seems like people like to buy it there for whatever reason. What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
7:37 in Chicago. Today's weather currently is 51 and sunny. High's going to be 64. Lots of sunshine. In Phoenix, 70 and clear right now, and onto a high of 102 and sunny. In the NBA, the Bulls play the Raptors tonight, and the Suns take on the Trailblazers. Last night in the Major League Baseball, Diamondbacks lost to the Marlins 3-2. The Cubs lose to the Indians in 10, 2-1, and the Sox beat the Twins 13-8. to win 5 in a row. The NFL schedule was released. The Bears are to play the first Sunday night game against the Rams. And this weekend, the second leg of the Triple Crown, the Preakness is this Saturday. And will they allow Baffert's horses to run?
I thought it was a done deal. He was in. Yeah. They wouldn't let Baffert in the place, but the horse is okay.
Yeah.
The horse didn't do it to himself.
We do have a couple accidents to report. I apologize. 294, there's a disabled vehicle blocking two left lanes on 294 North between right by Grand Avenue, and an accident on 294 South right before Ridgeland. All three lanes are blocked. I apologize about that.
Well, you apologize because they're blocked or you didn't talk about it?
I forgot to talk about it.
Oh, all right.
I was too excited about sports.
That's because you're here in the office. You don't care. You already went by there.
Right.
John, how are you?
Tom, I'm good. How about you?
Yeah, we're in there. We're trying to. We have so many subjects to talk about, and Lou got us off on peri mutual wagering, which
that's great.
Which is always good.
Always learn from Lou.
Well, you know, I'm pretty versed on that stuff. What does that say about somebody from the South Side? Just saying. I used to go around the track and pick up tickets that people threw away and check and see if they threw away a winner. They never did. But it was kind of fun going to my aunt and uncle. Do you remember them at all, David, Dan and Sally?
Yeah, a little bit.
You played poker with them, I think, a couple times.
Yeah, okay, yeah, now I remember.
Because Sally was a piece of work, but they would go to the trade. They would double dip every Saturday. They'd go to Arlington, then they'd go to the harnesses at night.
Oh, wow.
I mean, that's a long day. But they loved it. And I just, thank God there was no racing on Sunday. They got 1 week. He worked second shift, she worked first shift. So they basically never saw each other, and they were to the track both things on Saturday, and then they stayed home on Sunday and did God knows what. Thank God there was no racing on Sunday. They'd have been there. Just they were strange, whatever. An interesting family life, shall we say. Just some individual numbers for last year on this inflation. Year over year, energy's up 25%. Gasoline's up 50%, okay? Used cars and trucks up 21%, 10% of that in April. 1 month, 10%. Anybody who's in the used car business, they'll tell you one thing, they can't find cars, okay? They're none to be had. Transport services up 5.6%. I understand, Jan, you're a Uber Lyft taker. I understand those guys are up like 20% in the last 4 weeks, aren't they?
Well, they've had such a drop in drivers. I mean, because during the lockdowns, nobody was pretty much going anywhere, and they were a lot of people just gave up the jobs, and so now they're scrambling to get drivers back, just like the car rental place is just scrambling to get cars back. I got an email from Enterprise Rent a Car the other day asking if I wanted to sell my car to them. It's like if I had a car, I'd
say I'll come and rent one.
It's always, we've got cars we want to dump on our customers. And they have a warranty and everything else. I've never seen it go in the opposite direction. So that shows just how desperate they are.
Well, Audrey's cousin, Eddie, who I'd love to get on the show because he knows more about the car industry than anybody on earth. I mean, his dad owned Ed Johnson Oldsmobile years and years ago. He said there's guys that have come in from other used car places and bought cars off his lot and just took the offer. He goes, I've been in the business 40 years. I've never seen that happen. By the way, where do you work? I own a used car block two towns over, and you're buying my used car. Well, yeah. Okay.
It's really hard for me to get my head around all the disruptions that this last year and a half of craziness has caused. And I don't think it's possible to get a handle on it. There is so much nuttiness about this. And it's costing people too. That's the thing.
Oh sure.
In the meantime, if it ever stabilizes, until it does, there's going to be wild fluctuations in the cost of pretty much anything and everything. So,
well, it was preceded by really decades of concentration in industries. Really, I mean, I think that's part of it. The building blocks of the carnage that you're seeing now have been etched in the concrete for a while. I mean, when they start talking about the shortage in chips, if you listen to a real good analysis of it, when I say good, I'm not talking about the guy's opinion. I'm talking about the history of it. Or read the article. They'll talk about how many places are out of the business and how much has moved overseas and how we used to do, you know, 30 years ago, 60% were here and now it's 50. I mean, my numbers I'm kind of making up, but it's about that level. Right now it's 15 or 20% are here. And, oh, by the way, there used to be 8 companies and now there's 4. I mean, this the same cheat sheet you can use for every class, right? Less people and all of a sudden they, you know, the demand's down a little bit, they lay people off or they ship it here and all of a sudden it's back on them and all of a sudden you're having trouble finding people and, you know, I don't know. And I think you've lost some skill sets. I don't know anything about the chip business, but the railroad business. I mean, Mayor Daley asked me one day in the gym, he goes, well, what would it take to get a car manufacturer here in Chicago? Well, they now have an assembler here building the CTA cars that are, they're owned by a Chinese firm. Okay. So an assembler is a lot different. I mean, I could orchestrate us putting together a plant to assemble CTA cars. I mean, you're an assembler. I mean, you can buy 90% of it and just put it together. That's different than building a car where you're doing all the stamping, you're doing the punching, you're doing all the slitting, all that stuff yourself. But you don't need to do that. I mean, if you don't want to, I mean, you can assemble it. Plus, a CTA car is a pretty simple car compared to a railroad car. But you lose it. I mean, what if I put a quarter page ad in the Tribune? Now that even that's showing my age, right? It said is, you know, we wanted 4 manufacturing engineers, eight fixture guys, and and 2 rail car engineers. Do I even get a call?
No.
Do they even know what that is? I mean, where do you find a tool and die maker? Where do you find a guy who knows how to put stuff in a fixture and weld the side of a car? I mean, what I'm talking about, I don't want to get too detailed, but when you a side of a railroad car or something, what you do is you have this massive fixture that's flat, okay, and you have clamps all over the place, and you basically, there's a million parts that go in there. Not a million, but there's a whole bunch. There's a 5-foot long piece and a 3-foot. You put them in there, and there's a bazillion clamps, and you clamp all these things down. It's called a fixture, a jig or a fixture. If it's one piece, it's a jig. If it's a huge thing, it's a fixture. And then the welding guys weld the thing all together. And when you pull the thing up, it's the side of a car. It's pretty fascinating to watch. But there's 50 pieces of metal that are now all welded together. And guess what? You got one side of a car. And the fixture is 85 feet long. That's how long the side of the car is. Do you think anybody, I mean, without finding somebody, without training them, do you think 3 guys come off the street tomorrow and you let them, imagine what the side of that car is going to look like. The windows won't fit. The thing won't be straight. I mean, because every time you weld something, it shrinks, right?
Right. So
I mean, if you don't know exactly how to do that stuff and how much to allow for shrinkage on 50 or 60 or 80 or 100 welds, I mean, we're not talking about, you know, third grade stuff here. But I don't know where you find one of those guys tomorrow. I mean, there's some place, but it's not like you couldn't train somebody. But I think it would be a long buildup, don't you?
Oh yeah. Well, I just saw an article the other day in the Epoch Times about U.S. Steel's plan to build this. You know, it was a multi-billion-dollar investment in the Pittsburgh metro area to reactivate some of these defunct plants to build lightweight steel for manufacturing cars. And they finally threw in the towel and gave up because it's just been this frustrating battle with the health department about all this environmental, you know, dilly-dally you got to go through to get any kind of heavy industry built, even when the area is crying for jobs and you got all this land that's not doing anything better at the moment. So now U.S. Steel's backed out of that. Maybe some foreign steel manufacturer will come in and take advantage of it. But it shows even if you had the workers, where are you going to find a place for them to work?
Well, it's some phenomenon, Jan, and that's why. And it's really good. This is, I'm talking late 70s. So we're talking how many years ago? Damn near 50? 45? One of the reasons why there's no railroad manufacturers in the U.S., and they're all from overseas, is because the people in the people overseas are really happy to raise the middle finger to the regulators here in this country. But here they're all over everybody. But they're not going to go after China. I mean, if the China basically poisoned people's dogs, right, with the dog food, they didn't. Whatever happened to them? They didn't get spanked.
Yeah, I don't see anybody losing their job or going to jail for that.
No, or the plasterboard in the south. The plasterboard was so bad, David, I don't know if you knew this or not, the plasterboard was so bad that when it got wet, it would eat through the copper wiring. What did that do to your lungs, for God's sake? If it's eating through copper wiring, I mean, what are they doing? It means Home Depot replaced some of it. Okay, fine. But imagine if that was somebody here.
Yeah, it really frosts me. I mean, talk about the fix is in.
Yeah.
Go light on this bunch. And why? You know, it's like, it just defies good sense to look the other way because you want to attract a foreign company that would just as soon put everybody in this country out of business as see them succeed. And your own grassroots, historic companies with some kind of connections to the Western Hemisphere, you just make it impossible for them to do business. The thinking behind this just nauseates me, but there's nothing new about this either. It's been going on for a long time. But
well, these guys have some general iron by me. They can't open up all their new home. Yet everybody knows that what we want to have happen, and it ties into what you just said. Nobody really wants U.S. Steel to reopen an open hearth furnace from the 1890s because they're dirty as all get out, right? And the world now is all about recycled steel. And the company that's the best in that, it's probably, well, I'm not saying it's the best investment because you never can tell what the price is, it's gone straight up, is Nucor. So when you General Iron, these guys, I mean, everybody's lined up in their pickup trucks, and they have, with the metal that they're getting, the scrap dealers, and then guys would show up with trucks with probably 40 or 50 crushed cars on them, right? And these guys, they would leave with a huge truck with pellets of steel on there. Now, you can make, it used to be you couldn't do squat with that except, garbagey steel. But now, you can take that like it's new steel and redo it and pull the impurities out of it. And you can make girders for bridges or buildings out of recycled steel. And Nucor has all that technology. Where U.S. Steel pretty much still wants to make steel from scratch, which is fine. Especially steel and everything is all made from scratch. It's stuff that is done at, what was the place on Cortland? Finkel's. Yeah, no, those guys, they made steel from scratch. A lot of guys do. But if you want to use the recycled stuff, I mean, Nucor. But now we're dying to get recycled stuff, but we don't want any recyclers in town. God, that's dirty. I mean, they're on a street up by me that was zone for industrial from years and years ago. Well, people move close, so we don't want those guys by us. Okay, well, that's interesting. They were here first. And by the way, it's zone industrial. Yeah, we don't want them here. All the Karens want them out here. Okay, so let's move them somewhere on the south side where, like, nobody lives. All of a sudden, it turns out somebody does live there. Somebody lives close enough to them. Then it becomes a black-white issue. What are you shoving these guys out of a white neighborhood and putting them near a black neighborhood? I mean, whatever you want, whatever card you want to play, you play. The simple fact is there needs to be a recycled facility because you don't want to put it all in the dump and start over where you got massive dumps with steel in them. And, well, by the way, you're polluting the hell out of the place making new steel when you don't have to. So somehow or another, Jen, we got to figure out how to do this. And yet the way we go about it, everybody's bitching about everything. I mean, am I wrong or not?
Right, and they got the power to dig in their heels long enough and hard enough to make it pretty much impossible that anything gets done. And there's got to be some more flexibility or willingness to compromise. And you can't have a pollution-free environment anywhere if you're building things and if you're dragging, transportation vehicles through it. And even, in the event of a time when we have all the electric automobiles, where do you think the juice is going to come from to fuel those cars? It isn't going to come from solar energy. It's going to be still coal-fired plants and everything else. And countries with any kind of dream of expanding are building coal-fired plants, and we're trying to put them out of business. And that's fine if you got something to replace them, but you don't. So I don't think the thinking here is at all clear, and we just assume, purify ourselves into destitution instead of making some tough choices and saying it's never going to be perfect. It's not supposed to be on Earth. That's for the afterlife, you know.
Well, but I wouldn't want to live on the ground.
Can.
I wouldn't want to live on the grounds of a recycling plant, because it's not the steel that's a problem. It's all the other stuff you pull out of the washing machines and everything else, right? That goes airborne, the insulation and everything. That's a problem. Yet, you drive around Chicago, and what you see, if you get out of downtown and get out of some of the nicer areas, you see an abandoned city. I mean, between the Stevenson and the river, all those railroad lines are now pretty much abandoned because, guess what? The city took so long to fix some of the bottlenecks that they all go around the city. Couldn't wait to drive the railroads out of here. So there's got to be a half a mile between the Stevenson and the river. It's empty all the way to the south side. There's places on the behind Western Boulevard where they had factories. They're all gone. There, you can't tell me that there isn't some place in this city that you can't put a recycling plant that's within it's a half a mile away from everybody and just say, this is the recycling plant. Don't live within a half a mile of the place. I mean, what are we doing? I mean, is there no common sense anywhere?
Well, I this is, you know, the whole zoning issue in this city and elsewhere has just run up against such philosophical, you know, quagmires that, you know, in the past, if you had some horrible business going on, gradually people who had homes there and watched the thing transforming into an industrial area got the heck out of there. And there isn't any shortage of land in Chicago to build on. We got acres of empty lots, but there isn't any kind of planning behind this to make it an orderly transfer of a population to a place that's away from some of the stuff. And we don't seem to have any concerted effort to bring, you know, dirty businesses back here. And they're going to be dirty. You know, there's no way of getting around that. But it's there's never been clean ways of making money in big amounts. And God knows that we need enough money to make this whole thing work, that there's going to be a lot of dirt.
Well, in California, they want to close all the power plants and they want all the cars to go electric. Now, how does that fit on the same page?
You can't have enough solar panels on your roof to, you know, power your house and your car and whatever devices you have attached to it and your Wi-Fi and everything. There isn't enough space. I mean, no matter how many lots you own.
But I would say, on a gradualist approach, I can only imagine you and me being farmers, but if we had a farm and we put up a few solar panels and maybe a small windmill, there's no doubt, John, that one of our vehicles should be electric. Right?
I mean, but if you try to do everything.
No, but I'm saying we should, I mean, when we buzz off to town, why do we want to take the Suburban, for God's sake, and use up gas when we can just take, you know, if there's an electric pickup truck, let's just take that. I mean, we got the power right on the roof. Why do I need to burn up some gas? Right? I mean, there's no doubt that if we use our head, but we never do. I mean, for the last 25 years, government vehicles, you know, and your people's, I'll give you a good one, the people's gas vans should be powered by natural gas. They're not. Well, that van never goes more than 40 miles from home base, does it?
No.
So why aren't the people's gas vans natural, at least natural gas powered, which is pretty much not polluting, not the same as gasoline or diesel? I mean, we don't even do it in the obvious stuff. But how many government vehicles do you think there are in Washington, D.C.? Why aren't they either natural gas or electric?
Well, that's where it would start, you would think, but there isn't any incentive there either. The people's gas has gone to some of vehicles, I think, are powered with natural gas. I see these signs touting that as they drive through it, because the gas company is, you know.
Well, the place on Elston, the natural gas station closed.
Right.
So, hey, what do you make of this? How bad worldwide is this thing going to end up in Israel? And secondly, this inflation. How many days or weeks before we lose total confidence in the Fed? By the way, did you see yesterday where even people in the current administration told the lady who's the head of Center for Disease Control, hey, you can't be telling people that vaccinations are the be-all to end-all and still telling people you got to wear a mask indoors. You got to straighten your message out or you're going to lose confidence.
I'd like to see that whole bunch, including Fauci, swept out.
Yep.
And make him actually work for a living. I mean, when was the last time Fauci saw a patient? Maybe when he was an intern in 1966. I would never go to that guy for health advice. I'd go to Jay Prisker before I went to him.
But I'd fire all the people in NSA. Why are we doing nothing about these cyber attacks? Or do we keep saying it's a company's problem?
I couldn't believe it when Psaki, the news conference said that this is a private company and we're monitoring it. It's like, you don't care any more than that?
Right.
Like, what kind of approach do you take to secure government communications?
Well, the Pentagon got hacked in. Well, it's the same thing when a bank, if somebody breaks into your house and wires money out of your account because you left your password, they're going to say it's the bank's fault. They're not going to go after a crook. It's way too much work. I mean, we need a total tone change. And Obama didn't do it. Trump didn't do it. This guy's not going to do it. I mean, there needs to be a tone change here, John. And I don't know what it is, but I don't see it happening. We'll talk about it on Monday. But S&P futures up 975. NASDAQ futures up 89. We're making an attempt at a comeback, way better than we came in this morning. Hopefully we'll bounce back some. We'll be back tomorrow with Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.